Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. If you've received something that looks like junk mail from a credit card company, you might want to read it. Credit card companies are jacking up interest rates by 20 to 30%. But because there's no law that mandates how these notifications are sent out, the banks wouldn't mind if you just threw away the notice and continued paying the minimum balance. Here's what's going on. Democrats recently passed the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act, but they've given what the New York Times calls a gift to the industry. That is because the rules do not go into effect until February. A recent New York Times editorial says, quote, "The credit card industry, which clearly wants to make a killing in the Christmas season, used this unnecessarily long grace period to intensify its predations, doubling interest rates on people who pay on time and driving up rates by an industry-wide average of about 20%. Now, everyone, from those with the poorest credit to those with the best, is being affected by this. Profits from credit card penalty fees are expected to top $20.9 billion this year alone. That's $20.9 billion. 100,000 credit card transactions in the U.S. happen every single minute. As credit card companies face rising public anger and a potential perfect storm of economic bad news, the investigative team at Frontline has examined the future of the massive consumer loan industry and its impact on a fragile national economy. Many fear the credit card industry could be at the center of the next crisis. Others are just worried about how to keep their credit card interest rates and fees under control. On today's Your Call, we continue our Monday series, Agenda for a New Economy, by focusing on something most of us do on a regular basis. We use our credit cards. We're going to be talking about the credit card industry. And if you pay attention to your monthly bill, what really stands out for you, or do you pay attention to it? Have you noticed that your rates have gone up recently? Do you feel like you have any power over this? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What reforms would you like to see, and what reforms would actually make a difference? Today, we're joined by Oriana Zeldugranados, co-producer of Frontline's The Card Game, an award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker. The Card Game airs tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on PBS. You can also watch it online, and you can find the link at yourcallradio.org. We're also joined by Gail Hillebrand, a senior attorney at the Consumers Union, nonprofit publisher of Consumer Reports magazine. Gail manages the financial services campaign there, and she also is involved in the new website,
DefendYourDollars.org.
DefendYourDollars. Thank you. DefendYourDollars.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Gail, I want to start with you because you have dedicated your life to reform. And this is the first time in 10 years that Congress has passed credit card reform. How significant is this?
The new reforms that are going into effect in February are very significant because for the first time, the interest rate will not go up on the money you've already borrowed unless you're 2 months late. That's a very big reform. It means for the first time, the price you're told about the credit will be the price you actually pay for that credit. And we think that's why the companies are scrambling so hard to raise rates now before our new protection starts.
So this does not go into effect until February?
That part does not go into effect till February. One important part has gone into effect now, and it's the thing that means you have to read your mail. The provision that allows you to say, no thanks, I want to keep my old terms, even though you'll probably close off my card, is already in effect. You get 45 days notice if your rate's going up. And between now and February 22, if you ignore that notice, your rates will go up on your existing balance as well as your new purchases.
And they can go up by how much?
Sky's the limit.
And it's totally legal.
It's totally legal. I mean, there really wasn't an outpouring of outrage about what credit card companies were doing. It will become illegal, but not until February 22. Between now and then, you read the notice. If you don't like what your card company is doing, you have the right to say, I reject the change, but they probably will close your account. They certainly will freeze you from new purchases, and your minimum payment can go up as much as double when that happens.
Oriana, what really strikes you about the new reforms?
Well, I think it is very important that the universal default, the practice of any time, any reason interest rate increases on people is going to go away. And that's a very important change. There are some other important changes. Just clarifying the disclosure forms that you get in the mail will help people hopefully to be able to sort of sort through you know, but most people we interviewed for our documentary told us that they don't think disclosure really works because most people are accustomed now to throwing away that sheet of paper that comes with the card and beginning to make purchases. And that's really where the tricks and traps are hidden. So it's important for people to realize that, you know, they should try to read. And hopefully we haven't really seen yet how the credit card company is going to shape their new disclosures, but hopefully it will be better than what it's been in the past.
In the new documentary, you film people who are trying to make sense of these lengthy documents, and it's almost close to impossible. You also, and we're going to play some clips throughout the show, but you also interview Shailis Mata, who is former Providian CEO, and he's never agreed to be interviewed until this documentary. And he actually said that you need almost an advanced degree to figure out what these credit card companies are doing, what changes they're making.
Yeah, Mr. Mehta was very frank about the fact that the disclosures are sort of designed. The pricing is designed so that people don't know what they're paying up front. And that is one of the goals of the new law. And hopefully that will at least help. Although we are worried, certainly many people we interviewed told us to watch out because the credit card companies are probably doing what they call our innovations right now to try to figure out new ways to, you know, fool the customer, basically, which is the reason why everybody's so outraged right now.
And find new loopholes.
Yes, and one that we're seeing already is called an interest rate rebate. You're offered a high rate and told if you pay on time, you'll get a rebate down to a more reasonable rate. But you can lose that rebate at any time. The old hair trigger, you know, one day late, $1 short, and now your interest rate is back up to 30%. We're starting to see that one already.
Gail, why has it taken so long to get any regulation? I mean, why has Congress dragged their feet on this?
Well, I think the other way to ask that question is, why did Congress finally act? And I think one reason Congress finally acted, these practices, many of them were pioneered against lower income consumers in the kind of the separate part of the market that was more always kind of a ripoff market. But they were so profitable, they generated so much money that companies started migrating them first to regular cards and people who maybe had some trouble paying, and then on to the rest of the cardholder base, including people who always paid on time. And those consumers stood up and said, I held up my end of the bargain and I want change.
So the outrage basically worked.
The outrage worked because the companies were so greedy that they moved it far enough into the customer base it was happening to everybody. Not just the poor. And my mailbox says it's still happening to everybody.
So is it feasible to say that if this were still just happening to the poor, maybe we wouldn't see these reforms?
We didn't see these reforms when it was just happening to the poor. It's when they started migrating it into the middle class and pretty broadly across the customer base. That we finally started to see them.
Well, and what I like about the documentary is you actually give a voice to so many people who have been affected by this, people who have filed bankruptcy. And it really struck me because you're not just talking about people who took a credit card maybe when they couldn't afford it, but you've got stories about a woman buying a $3 cup of Starbucks with her debit card, and she has no money in her account, but the transaction still goes through, and that cup of coffee ends up costing about 40 bucks. So yeah. You have all these different stories.
Yeah, we really tried to give kind of a view of all the different problems that people have confronted with their cards. And that doesn't include just credit cards these days. Debit cards are now growing faster than credit cards. And a lot of people who may have gotten burned by a credit card are now turning to a debit card using their own money. Not necessarily understanding that if there's a mistake or if they don't write down every single transaction or if they're check is, you know, 4 hours late getting deposited into their account for direct deposit, they can be in serious trouble and pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars in fees. And those fees get automatically taken out of your bank account. So you're $400 short the next month. And then that creates a cycle of debt. And it's similar to the credit cards, where if you can't afford the loan in the first place, you're going to get trapped and you're going to get stuck with incredibly punitive fees that could, you know, potentially drive you into a deeper hole.
Well, since you bring up the debt trap, this is a good time to play a clip from the new documentary, The Card Game, that airs tomorrow night at 9 o'clock on PBS. And Lowell Bergman is the reporter in this piece. And in this clip, he is questioning Rick Lake, who is the CEO of California Check Cashing.
What people say is that this is a debt trap, that you wind up at the end of every month taking out another loan to pay back last month's loan. Not true?
Debt trap. To me, the common sense definition of that is that there's something unknown about the product. You've been in our stores. You've seen our posters. You've seen our disclosures. Did you at any time feel that there was something you didn't know?
But to the criticism that the most valuable customers for you are the people who revolve continuously, that in the end, the amount of money someone pays back may be far beyond the cost of the actual loans themselves.
Well, all I can tell you is that is not the majority of our customers.
But it's the most profitable part of customers.
It's not the majority of our customers. Now, it's no different than someone who, you know, pays a late credit card. Would you say that they generate the most in fees? Those that overdraft their bank account generate the most in service fees. I mean, that is the reality of it.
Well, the reality is that, in a sense, those who least can afford it pay the most in the banking industry in general and credit cards in general. And it sounds like it's the same in payday.
I would say it's true throughout the finance world.
Rick Lake says not only do the poor and those living paycheck to paycheck pay more, but it's difficult for them to find out how much they're paying when they go to a bank, because banks intentionally never fully reveal to customers how their overdraft system works.
And that is a clip from The Card Game, a new documentary from Frontline. That's Lowell Bergman questioning Rick Lake, the CEO of California Check Cashing. Oriana, I mean, what's so interesting about the documentary is you interview people that we rarely hear from in the media, and his honesty about the poor really struck me in that clip.
Yeah, we were surprised in all of our interviews how frank everybody was and how much of an understanding they do have of the way the industry affects people. And Rick Lake, he's the CEO of a chain of stores in Northern California who do payday lending,
right?
Which is an interesting, I had no idea when I first started researching the documentary what a payday loan was. But basically, if you have a checkbook and a bank account, you can walk into these stores and get a $200 loan. It's about maximum $245 in California. But basically, you know, he makes the point, which is correct, if you're about to get your electricity turned off, it might be better to get one of these than to have to pay to get your electricity turned back on. So, I mean, obviously there's a reason. But what I didn't understand is how big the need for this was. There's a huge market for this. And his stores are filling that market. The problem, as we say in this clip, is that it's very easy for people who don't have the money to begin with to get the money. And then the next month or the next payday, they realize, now I'm $245 short again. I better go get another payday loan. And each time they're paying a $45 fee. So if you do that 10 times in a row, that's $450 you're paying for a service that's really just one loan, which is that $245 loan. So you're paying more than the loan was in fees. And it's a debt trap, as you know, it's been called a debt trap by pretty much everybody.
And here in California, the payday loan industry has been trying for several years to increase the loan amount. The reason that loan is $245 is that's the cap in the statute. If they succeed, people will be even farther behind when the next paycheck comes up.
We're going to take a quick break, and if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have any questions about your credit card, have you noticed anything different? Has your rate gone up? When you receive those statements, do you read them? I mean, the fact of the matter is, most people in this country use credit cards. There are 100,000 transactions every minute. So what is your relationship like with your credit card company? Has anything stood out for you lately? What reforms would you like to see? What reforms do you think could work? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, 91.7, your local public radio station. It's 20 minutes after 11 o'clock. And coming up at 12 o'clock, it's Grit Radio with Laura Flanders. At 1 o'clock, it's Alternative Radio. This week, Thomas Frank on conservatism, making government fail. He's the founding editor of The Baffler magazine and a columnist for The Wall Street Journal. That's at 1 o'clock on Alternative Radio, right here on your local public radio station, KALW, San Francisco. And that's followed, too, by The State We're In from Radio Netherlands. Stay tuned. ¶¶
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to have a conversation about how your past and where you come from has determined your present. As so many of us get together with the family over the holidays, how do you have a conversation about where you came from, an intergenerational conversation, and how does that determine your choices and how you live your life? That's tomorrow's show. And then Sandeep Roy on Wednesday, we will have a book show. We'll be talking about book recommendations and some good gift ideas at our nice independent bookstores. That's on Wednesday. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about credit cards, every Monday, we do a series called Agenda for a New Economy by talking about the economy we want to create instead of complaining about the economy we have, although there's also room to do that. We're talking about credit cards today and what's going on in Congress. They recently passed credit card reform, first time in 10 years, but this doesn't go into effect until February. And so until then, they're jacking up interest rates by 20, even 30%. Now, there's no law that mandates how notifications are sent out. And the banks really wouldn't mind if you just threw away notices. So if you do get a notice from your credit card company, you definitely want to read the fine print. And if you have any questions about the credit card industry, if you've seen anything that looks a little questionable lately, have you seen your interest rate increase? If you'd like to talk about the relationship you have with your credit card company, we'd love to hear from you. Also, what kind of reform would you like to see? 866-798-8255. What reform do you actually think works? And then also, Gail says now is the time to really call your representative to say, strengthen these rules, make sure they go into effect. What do you think people should say, Gail?
People need to call both the House and Senate and say, I want the Consumer Financial Protection Agency. Thank you, Congress, for passing the Credit Card Protection Act, but I don't want to wait 10 years to fight off the next problem. We need a government agency to make financial products safe, just like we already have an agency to make your car safe.
And that is Gail Hillebrand. She's senior attorney at the Consumers Union. That's a nonprofit publisher of Consumer Reports magazine, and they're also out with a website, defendyourdollars.org, and we'll link to that at our website right after the show. We're also joined by Oriana Zelda Granados. She's co-producer and writer of Frontline's The Card Game. That airs tomorrow night at 9 on PBS. You can also watch it online tomorrow night. And we have to talk about, just quickly, before we get to phone calls, why this is legal. I mean, why is this happening? And in the piece, yeah, there were so many clips I wanted to choose, and obviously I couldn't choose that many. But Lowell Bergman does interview Senator Chris Dodd, who's on the Banking Finance Committee, who's received $7 million. Is it in the last year?
It's in the last election cycle.
Last election cycle. He admits it on camera. He says, yes, I've received it. And basically says we need to take money out of politics in not so many words.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Senator Dodd has been supportive of campaign finance reform. Mm-hmm. And he has been a leader on this issue, but he also has taken money from the banks, as have every single member of the Senate Banking Committee except one who self-finances his campaign. That's the senator from Wisconsin. And so just the fact that they're all taking money from the banks, obviously, has the appearance of impropriety. What his answer was basically, if you do public financing of elections, we won't need to take money from the companies. But until then, we have to run and we need money. And so and then he pointed to the fact that he had been the person who had been a leader on this issue for many years, not just in the last 2 years, but for many years. He has been a leader on this issue, along with many other people in the Senate. And in Congress. Congresswoman Maloney is another person we interviewed for the show, and she also has been a real leader on this issue. She's from New York. And so I think, you know, you have to take those two things into balance. But it is ultimately one of the things that affected me the most, and I guess I didn't understand until I really talked to Senator Dodd, is that to get 60 votes in the Senate in an issue like this, where many, many Democratic senators side with the credit card companies because their states like South Dakota or Delaware are home to all the credit card companies, it's very difficult to get 60 votes, and you have to get 60 votes to pass legislation like this. So basically, they have really had their backs up against the wall, even passing the act that did pass in April and May, And now with the CFPA, the Consumer Financial Protection Agency, they're facing another very, very strong fight. And that's why it's imperative for people to, if they want this agency, to call their representatives.
And Gail, when we look at regulations here in the U.S., how do they compare to regulations and credit card regulations in other countries?
The credit card is not as big a vehicle in Europe as here. The debit card kind of came first, but spread more widely. We have too much focus on disclosure. The idea that as long as we tell you what the deal is, you figure it out for yourself. And if the disclosure were half a page, that might work. But when the disclosure book is 50 pages for your bank account and multiple fine print pages for your credit card, we have to get away from the fiction of disclosure and talk about designing the product so it will actually work and will cost what you say it costs on the front end and work safely for most people who use it. And we have a long way to go in that regard.
Do Europeans and people in other countries use their credit cards as much as Americans?
No, not at all. It's much more of a debit-based transaction.
Denise has a question, one of our listeners. She says, are we better off with the introduction of credit cards over pre-credit days? That is the question, not whether we are being ripped off by the credit card companies.
Not all of us remember the pre-credit card days terribly well. I mean, the world we live in now, we have them. We have to deal with them. If the question is, are we better off making a personal choice not to use credit? I think right now, especially many people, the best choice, if you're carrying a balance, is put your card in the drawer, give your friends a hug and a bouquet of flowers and a certificate to babysit their kids and cut their lawn. This is not the time to go any further into debt if you're already carrying a balance, because you have no power if you're carrying a balance between now and the February 22 when you get these new protections.
No power. And then come February, will we have some power?
Come February, you'll have power in the sense the banks will no longer be able to do the most outrageous thing, which is raise the interest rate on the money you already borrowed. That means they'll have to tell you the truth about how much the next charge is going to cost, and then you can decide, based on your own family budget, if that's sensible for you or not.
All right, well, we have full lines, so let's go to our first caller, Andrew in San Francisco. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show. Hello, Andrew? Sorry about that, Andrew. Give us a call back. Let's hear from Timothy in Pacifica.
Yes.
Hi.
Good morning. I am just listening to the last 10 minutes of the discussion, but I'm calling in relationship to the news that some credit card companies are beginning to charge consumers who do not carry a balance month to month on their card, which includes myself. I'm a person who uses a frequent flyer connected card. And to me, it's utterly outrageous that any senator, any representative in the House would dare to allow through legislation, I don't care if they're in Delaware or South Dakota or wherever, that sort of behavior, egregious sort of greed on the part of the credit card companies, because as a person, I'm a plumber, I actually take credit cards in my business, I pay a merchant's fee, and everybody who I use my credit card with, the credit card company receives a merchant fee. But apparently that's not enough money for them. They want more money. And the real remedy, from my perspective, what has always been for all of these issues, is to eliminate money from the political system, in the sense of no donors, no private corporation, no person. We should have straight up nationally tax financed elections. And the final note for that for me is, if you make more money as a senator or a representative than your salary, except maybe for writing a book or giving speeches, we have a room with bars on the door for you when you leave office. I mean, then, you know, imagine what would happen. Then we would actually have people who want to be public servants running for office. We wouldn't have people who are just self-aggrandizing. Because, I mean, sorry, the idea that you're a senator or a congressperson from Delaware... So now you have to cater to the corporate credit card companies rather than your actual citizens.
Right.
It's an obscenity.
Well,
but then of course, you know, saying that a corporation has the status of a human being is the real ultimate obscenity.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Timothy. This was getting a bit of attention a few months ago, Gail, about people who pay off their card every month. the credit card companies aren't making money off of us, so they're going to charge? And what's the status of that?
Well, Timothy pointed out the exact truth here. The credit card companies make money on you if you use your card. They make money through the merchant fee, whether you pay it off in full or not. We're starting to hear some reports that people are getting these notices. We think what's happening is the banks are kind of testing the waters. And the fees on which there's public outrage, they'll move on to the next one. So if you see a new fee you don't like, you should don't just cancel your card. Call up the company and tell them why you're canceling your card.
And how much are those fees?
Oh, they seem to be pioneering in the $1 and $2 a month range. We don't know if it's going to stick. We think they're trying it with a few other customers to see if they get pushback from the customers. So for the public, now's the time to push back.
And you also pointed out something interesting before the show. I went with the Save the Tree option, so I look at my statement online, but the card company never emails me to let me know when my bill is due. I just have to remember. But you said it's a really good idea to print out the bill so you can look at maybe some of these hidden fees.
You can go one better than printing out the bill. Say no thanks to the paperless option. That means the bill will come in the mail. So if you miss it online, you'll still have a chance to pay before you're late. It's going to be really important not to be 60 days late after the new protections. And if you're holding a piece of paper, at least for most of us who are over 25, you're more likely to be able to easily skim, go to your spouse or partner and say, hey, did you make this charge? And make sure that those charges really are yours before you pay the bill.
So if Timothy finds that he's getting charged a couple extra dollars a month for paying his bill on time, he should call the credit card company.
Call him up. Tell him you don't like the new fee. Ask him to put you in a different card that doesn't have it. Think about getting a different card.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Timothy. Let's next go to Andrew in San Francisco. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yes. I got a couple of questions. Is it really the case that there really is no rate limit? All they've got to do is inform you 4 to 5 days ahead of time, and they can raise it whatever they want to. So there's no rate limit. You know, I remember as a kid learning that that the interest rate limit was limited by law. I can't remember what it was, like 16% or something like that. It used to be limited by law now, and the influence of credit card companies got that taken away. Now there's no limit to usury. There was an idea of what usury was and abuse was. And that seemed to have gone by the wayside. My other question is it the case that the bankruptcy laws are still still really bad for the consumer, so that that you cannot, if you declare bankruptcy, the chances of you being able to discharge your credit card debt are pretty slim, and so essentially you're involved in a kind of servitude, involuntary servitude, very much like debtor's prison, except you're not confined to a jail. Mm. Now, I have a comment. I worked for 6 years. I worked for the Pavilion Credit Card Company.
Oh.
Some of you might remember shameful corporation. What I learned was that the ideal customer for the credit card company was the customer that carries a large balance and pays the minimum amount every month. So that is the credit card company's goal, to put you in that position for the rest of your life, because that's how they make their money. That's how they make their money, from that interest. That's their customer. So their marketing, their sales techniques, all the verbiage, confusing legal verbiage that they have in their account contracts and so on. That's all aimed at creating that customer. And what they generally do is, if you are able to pay off your minimum every month and you've shown that over time, what they will do is they will gradually increase your credit limit. So that bit by bit, you are drawn into deeper and deeper debt, a bigger balance, the chances of you paying off that minimum, paying off the whole debt and not paying that minimum is reduced drastically. So virtually they want to, their aim is to put you into debt slavery, essentially. Where you can work for them the rest of your life.
What did you do at Providian?
I was a call center person.
Hmm.
And let me tell you another aspect of Providian. They would sign people up for these so-called products, financial products, things like, if you miss your payment, we'll pay your payment for you and so on. And it sounds good on the surface of it, but in the fine print, they take so much away that it's virtually useless. And what they did was have people sign up the customers involuntarily, so that you'd get a bill and some huge proportion of people wouldn't look at their bill and say, they signed me up for something I didn't ask for.
Mm.
They'd pay it, and then they'd be stuck.
Well, thank you for calling in. I don't know if you heard earlier, but in the new Frontline documentary, The Card Game, which airs tomorrow night, Shailesh Mehta, the former Providian CEO, agreed to be interviewed for the very first time. And, Oriana, what struck me about him is he almost admitted everything that our caller just said. And this guy, Shailesh Mehta, he lives in a house that looks just like the White House. At first, I thought, that's an odd shot of the White House. And then I found out it was actually his house. Almost $1 billion a year in profit. He resigned in 2001 after the company paid $300 million after a fairly rare investigation by regulators.
That was an investigation that was actually started right here in the San Francisco City Attorney's Office.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gail was involved in some of that. And then it was later joined by the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, which is the main regulating body for some of these credit card issues. Unfortunately, the OCC has rarely done anything. This is one of the only times that they actually did something. And the accusations against Providian were wide and many. And this ended up being a settlement where they actually paid, they had to refund money back for some of their most egregious practices, but not for everything, certainly. It was only for a few practices. It didn't cover all of the different things. I don't know. They were accused at the time of actually purposefully mailing bills, you know, very close to the due date and then having you have to mail it to New Hampshire to pay your bill, which was an extra 3 days in the mail. I don't know, you know, I don't have the actual facts to prove whether that was true or not, but that was one of the accusations. There were a lot of different accusations about the company.
And Providian spearheaded a lot of these practices. They sort of invented these practices.
Well, they considered it innovations, and that's what Mr. Mehta says in the interview, that basically these were the credit card business, and you have to realize that the credit card companies are led by people who are in the business to make profit, and they're pressured by their boards to make as much profit as possible. And generally what happens is when you're in a company and you're in the position of leadership, you want to try to figure out how to innovate, how to stretch the market, how to move into new markets, which is basically what they did with the moving into poorer people, more of a subprime type market for credit cards, people who basically couldn't afford the cards to begin with.
And tapping the unbanked.
Right. And he calls it the unbanked and is, you know, I think proud of his accomplishments at the company. You know, they were making high profits, which from Wall Street, that's looked at as an excellent thing. It's just when you look at it from the perspective of the consumer and you know, obviously there's nothing wrong with making a profit and having a successful company. It's when there are tricks built in that it's viewed as being a terrible thing.
And in The Card Game, you will meet Shailesh Mehta. Again, first time he's ever agreed to do an interview, former CEO of Providian. And let's hear a clip. This is Lowell Bergman, Frontline's Lowell Bergman, questioning Shailesh Mehta.
Bankers will figure it out to comply and say, as long as I'm in compliance with what the government says, it's none of anybody's business to tell me what to do. That's the kind of mindset with which some people work. Tell me the rules, and then I'll outsmart you all.
They'll find the loophole.
Yeah, because you guys are, none of you are smart enough. You make the stupid laws, I'll comply, and I'll make money. It's market will bear, you know, and there are always some desperate people who will take the product. Lending money to people is never a difficult exercise.
That is Shailesh Mehta, former Providian CEO, first time he's ever been interviewed. And again, complete honesty.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's very frank and open. And we interviewed a number of credit card insiders off the record. None of them would actually go on the record. And I would say across the board, the general sentiment was the same, which is this idea that basically credit card companies will figure out ways around any laws you put in front of them.
I was curious when I watched the documentary. I sort of wanted Lowell Bergman to go a little further, but you said that you really wanted so many of these people, because they hardly ever speak to the media, to just speak for themselves.
Yeah, we believe it's very important for stories, all of our stories. We always look for people from inside an industry or from inside wherever, whatever it is we're reporting on, to just basically speak openly and honestly for themselves. And I think that when you do that, you actually feel closer to the truth than if you're having a bunch of people screaming on television, as you see on all the networks these days, you know, these screaming fests. It just doesn't really get to the truth. Whereas if you hear from their perspective why these things happened, I mean, you know, the people who run credit card companies are people, and they know, you know, they know what's going on. And so it's great. I think that's one of the things I really like about this documentary, is that you get to hear the truth from their own mouths.
And you can watch the documentary, The Card Game, tomorrow night at 9 on PBS. It'll also be shown online, and you can find a link at yourcallradio.org. If you're just joining us, it's our Monday series, Agenda for a New Economy, and we're talking about the new Frontline documentary, The Card Game, as well as the new reforms that recently passed in Congress. They go into effect in February, and what's happening is the credit card companies are increasing interest rates by 20, sometimes 30%. So if you get any notification, you definitely want to read it and read the fine print. In fact, one of our guests, Gail Hillebrand with Consumers Union, says you might be better off not even using your credit card until these new rules go into effect. We're also joined by Oriana Zildegranato. She's co-producer and writer of Frontline's The Card Game. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What is your relationship like with your credit card? Probably almost everybody listening has a credit card and probably uses it on a fairly regular basis. So are you aware of what goes on behind the scenes? Do you follow your bill? Do you understand it? Are there things on there that you don't understand? Have your fees gone up recently? And also, a lot of people do call credit card companies to try to get rid of fees. Does that work? And also, what kind of reforms do you want to see? What do you think would actually work? The toll-free number, again, is 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Mary in Santa Cruz. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I'm in just following up kind of with the last caller. I do have a credit card, and one of the things I noticed, he said that they target particular markets, and I had a credit card with a relatively high limit, and one day I went to make a purchase, and lo and behold, I found that my credit card limit had been cut in half, less than half, and that's a hard time to find out that you your limit has been lowered. But what I also learned later is that credit card companies, once they see, I guess when you start paying off your card or you have a high balance and you pay it off, that is a flag to them. And I have been doing that fairly regularly. And what has been happening is I thought that that's what they wanted, was people who could pay the bill. That shows that you can, you know, afford the card. And I've always paid my bill on time with these people, even though I have at times carried a balance. But now they've cut my balance so low that every month I use the majority of my credit. And what they don't speak about, the reason why I'm mentioning this is that on your credit record, if your credit record is sampled at any given time and they see that you're using a high percentage of whatever your credit card limit is, that goes against you as far as people being willing to lend you money or extend you credit. And so I wondered if your guests could speak to that.
All right. Thank you for the call, Mary. Gail?
Yes, Mary, we certainly are hearing from consumers all over the country who have a similar experience to yours. Their credit lines are cut, and sometimes they respond by trying to keep the balances lower, and then the credit line will be cut again. There's actually a name for that. It's called balance chasing. As you reduce your balance, your credit card company chases you and reduces it again. This is happening primarily because of the drying up in the securitization market. You know, the the problems in the mortgage market caused a confidence crisis. The bankers created a problem where they could no longer, people no longer trusted them to buy these securities, and they were securitizing your credit card loans as well. So as that source dried up, the banks said, oh my gosh, we've promised to loan all these people all this money, we better cut these lines. And so they did it in a fairly precipitous way. And you're right about the effect on your credit score. We used to tell people, just keep your balance half or lower than your limit. But now, because your balance, your limit might change at any time, you need to keep it a lot lower than that, probably 20 to 30%.
And if you cancel a credit card fee, does that negatively affect your credit score?
If you cancel the card?
I'm sorry, card. Yes.
It depends on how many cards you're already holding. If you have too many cards, getting rid of a card may help you. If it's your oldest card, it could hurt you because the duration of how long you've had a credit relationship matters. And if canceling the card causes the utilization, the amount of your credit line you're using in your other cards to go up, it could hurt you.
Okay. Thank you for calling in, Mary. You want to jump in?
Yeah, Mariana? I wanted to make a comment about that. One of the things that we were surprised about in the documentary was finding out that a lot of customers, if the bank, if let's say you have a high balance, like $25,000 on your various credit cards, and then they're going to raise your rates, there is, in the fine print, it says you have 30 days to protest this raising of my rate. So if you do that, you can call them up and say, no, I don't want you to raise my rate. What they'll say is, okay, fine, but we're going to shut down your account and you can't use it anymore. That does negatively impact your credit score because the bank themselves is shutting down your account and they report that to the credit score, you know, to the various people who develop the FICO score. And so it will hurt your credit score, which is kind of a 1-2 punch. Either I pay back at a higher balance, at a higher rate, or I get my credit score cut, which can obviously hurt people if they're trying to get a mortgage or refinance or something like that.
And then what about capping interest rates? Senator Dodd of Connecticut he introduced a bill to immediately freeze credit card interest rates and fees, but Senator Thad Cochran, Republican of Mississippi, blocked the vote.
Yeah, we actually deal with this to some degree in our documentary, which is one of the calls actually dealt with that, which is that, you know, in this country, there used to be what's called a usury law that prevented credit card companies from charging above a certain amount. And it wasn't just credit card companies, anybody who was giving a loan. I mean, these are loan sharking laws, basically. And because of various things, including a Supreme Court decision, these usury limits were basically eliminated for the credit card business.
We actually have a clip on interest rates. Again, this is a clip from The Card Game, which airs tomorrow night on PBS. In this clip, you'll hear from Joe Nocera. He's a New York Times columnist. The woman in the clip is Nessa Fettes. She is the vice president of the American Bankers Association. The credit card companies, which actually are the banks, right? The banks decided not to do any interviews in this piece. Instead, they said, talk to our lobbyist, which is the American Bankers Association. That's the woman in the clip. And then you'll also hear at the end from Martin Eakes. He is CEO of the Center for Responsible Lending.
No one's proposing capping interest rates.
No, they're not, and they're not going to. The Obama administration is very unwilling to do anything truly radical that would hurt the banks. Nobody's saying you can't charge whatever interest rate you want, at least at this point. I don't think that's going to change.
While the argument over regulation goes on, the landscape for the consumer in America has already fundamentally changed. It's simply harder to get a loan of any kind.
Between the new rules and the economy, we expect that it'll be harder for people to get credit cards. So we do know, we're already seeing it, that small businesses and companies will have a harder time getting credit cards. The limits are going to be lower, and interest rates going forward are going to be higher.
When I hear from the industry, oh, you're going to remove access to credit, I sort of shake my head and say, yes, that's exactly what's needed. There needs to be less debt in this system. Americans simply cannot pay back the level of debt that has grown over the last 30 years.
But they bought into this. This is the American way.
Well, if the great American economic value is translated to say we must provide debt to people who can't pay it back, then the great American way has lost its way.
And that's a clip from The Card Game, which airs tomorrow on PBS. Gail, the industry's argument is that these new laws will make it harder to get credit cards.
You know, since 1968 on the Truth in Lending Act, every time there's been a consumer reform, the banking industry has said, oop, it will cut off access to credit. We hear this and we hear it. But you may face a higher opening rate on your credit cards, but what you'll get is a rate that's going to stick after you borrow the money. And that's not a higher rate, that's a true rate. And if the truth is it costs more, we need to know that for our household budgets before we decide to borrow the money instead of after. And that's what the reform gives us.
All right, we have about 5 minutes left, so if you'd like to call in, now would be a good time. If you've got any questions about your credit card, if you have some stories to share with us about higher fees or something happening that caught you off guard, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go to Jerry in Cupertino. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Actually, the last clip you had kind of mentioned this, but It drives me nuts when people continually call it the credit card companies. I have a Visa card, but I don't pay Visa. I mean, Visa is the credit card company, but it turns out that the credit card issuer happens to be Wells Fargo or Bank of America. So when you say credit card companies, I immediately think Discover or MasterCard or Visa. I don't think the fact that the credit is actually given by a bank. Your credit card actually goes back to a bank somewhere. And so when you say credit card industry, it sounds like it's completely divorced from the fact that this is the banking industry, the same people who gave us subprime mortgages and the same people who got TARP bailouts. And so I think what you really need to do is you need to say, look, you're dealing with this huge monetary organization, which is the banking industry, and stop using the term credit card company, because that's really not what's driving this. It's the banking industry that's driving this.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Jerry. I actually caught myself when I was saying the credit card companies didn't give you interviews, but it's actually the banks that didn't give you the interview. What about the language, Gail? Do you, in your work at Consumer Union?
It is going to be mostly your bank. It might also be a credit union or a savings and loan, but the national banks have more than 95% of the credit card market, and they're the ones who not only have spread these practices so widely, but who have gotten their friendly regulator to say, oops, state law doesn't apply to them, and we're trying to change that as well.
Do you think Jerry makes a good point, though, about saying we should be saying it's the banks, not credit card companies?
It's the bank or the credit union, depending on who you have your credit card from.
Right.
But by and large, it's the bank.
And the banks also run those payday lending shops that we see on the corners.
Some of them are privately owned, or they have a publicly traded company. But the payday lending stores are generally, I would say there are some companies that have both credit cards and payday loan divisions, but it's not common. I'd say most of them are separate.
Okay.
But the banks, we haven't had much time to talk about the debit cards, but the banks also run the bank accounts, and they have, as she said, the majority of the credit card market. So it really is the banking industry we're talking about here. We actually really wanted to go into merchant fees and Visa and MasterCard in our and American Express and Discover are the four main ones. We wanted to go into that in our film, but we really didn't have time. But that is another very interesting topic, and sort of the changes that have happened in merchant fees.
Well, let's take a few calls, and then we'll get a final response from our guests since we're almost out of time. Let's go to Gregory in Berkeley. Hi, Gregory. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I want to say that I was a habitual credit card user for many years, had many credit cards. Recently I cut them to pieces, and I have not been using them, and I'm much happier.
Mm.
Not only because I escaped the abuses of the credit card company, the last rate increase went from, 16% to 35%.
Wow.
At that point I said, I'm tired of this abuse. I'm also tired of my own weakness in being suckered into paying for things with credit cards I don't think is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And I cut them up. And I'm much happier. You know, it is a kind of lifestyle. I had to learn a different lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
How to spend money in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, okay, maybe I'm not as spontaneous, but I am much, much happier.
Wow.
And the second thing is this, that if you want a good credit, your guest mentioned credit before. I said, if you want good credit, it's very simple. Do what I did. Have a one credit card. Charge groceries every 2-3 times a week. And at the end of 3 or 4 years, if you pay off the balance each month, your credit will be excellent. I was able to afford a good loan on a home by doing just that.
Well, thank you so much. You just gave us a great idea for a show about relationships with money and changing habits. And we're almost out of time, so I can't take any more calls, but I do have your questions. Julie in Monterey wants to know why you need a good credit score. Quickly, Gail?
You need a good credit score because it affects whether you can get credit and the cost of that credit. It will affect how much you pay on your mortgage, how much you pay on your car loan. It may even affect your credit report, may even affect whether someone will hire you for a job.
And then what about alternatives to credit cards? Are credit unions any better? Is there anything, does anything like a socially responsible credit card even exist?
we're still waiting for that. But there is a new study out by the Pew Charitable Trust showing that penalty fees and penalty interest are about 10 points lower with credit union credit cards than bank cards.
So credit unions would be a much better way to go.
They've been slower to pioneer these bad practices, and they're less bad.
Is that what you use?
No, but I pay my balance in full every month.
And final thoughts from you, Oriana?
Just about the credit unions. We also wanted to include, and on our website at www.pbs.org/frontline, you can see additional reporting about credit unions on our show. And you can also search for a credit union near you. We did find in our reporting that they are, in general, more responsible than banks, although there are some dangers with credit unions, just like with banks.
All right. And then, Gail, now again is a good time to call Washington.
Yeah, there's two things you can do this holiday season for yourself. Put your cards in the drawer if you're carrying a balance, and call Washington. Tell them you want a strong Consumer Financial Protection Agency.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That is Gail Hillebrand, senior attorney at Consumer Union, and she also directs defendyourdollars.org. We've also been joined by Oriana Zeldugranados, co-producer and writer of Frontline's The Card Game. It airs tomorrow night at 9 on PBS. You can also watch it online. Check yourcallradio.org for links. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for all of your calls and emails. I'll be right back to let you know what's coming up tomorrow. How has your past determined your present? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about how the decisions of our ancestors shaped who we are or hope to be. If you've made the decision to connect with your family history, what have you learned that changed the way you live your life? Join us live at 11 a.m. or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. With many family gatherings for the holiday weekend, how can you start the intergenerational conversations that allow you to understand where you come from? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also find links there to the Your Call blog and podcast. Malihe Razazan is producer, Matt Martin is executive producer, and Pete Misick is our web editor. Phil Hartman is the chief engineer, and Alan Farley is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.